Hello, everyone, again. This talk will be about, first, briefly, how my toy project came to be, then the technology I used on the client side, and then a little longer about the OpenACS features and Navi Server features that I've used, and platform-specific challenges and improvements. And then, if we have time, I will also give a small demo. So the timeline went more or less like this. In 2019, I bought myself an Oculus Quest. It was the first standalone VR headset, which was very cool. Then in March 2020, we get to stay home a lot. Then between spring and summer, I was a little bored. I decided to look into something to do in my spare time. Doing stuff virtually was very trendy, so there was also the chance to use it professionally, so I said, why not? And I started looking into VR on the web. In October 2020 was the first commit on the repo, and since then I've been working on it casually, improving it over time. The idea of this toy project was to have a social VR experience in the style of Mozilla Hubs. Those of you that are familiar with Mozilla Hubs, it's basically exemplified in this picture, is a 3D VR space where people can meet, talk together, somehow collaborate. The first question would be, why then not using Mozilla Hubs directly? At the time, there was no self-hosting as an option. And I was not happy with the subscription model or even the free tier that was offered at the time. It was, in my opinion, too complex for what was non-existent as a requirement at the time. So I didn't even know where what I would do with it. And still, they were talking about Redis and Postgres and stuff in the cloud. And it was OK. And then I was confident I could go far enough with a smaller footprint. Mozilla Hubs is great, but it's complex, and I was they were forking a lot of stuff in their own distribution, so I was not sure it was going in the right direction at the time. The outcome, we see a couple of screenshots. This was the bigger picture is a demo we managed to give to our colleagues upstairs. Where we met together in this VR environment, and these other two screenshots, they exemplified, well, I'm holding an object over there, and there I am showing the painting feature. So a few cool things are there, meaning we can upload and spawn 3D models on the VR scene. We have WebRTC streaming, which works both for speaking to each other, but also to project stuff on a surface. So we can have hybrid participation in the style of either a webcam or a desktop stream. We have painting. We have physics. And then recently, I could introduce, thanks to a component from the VR community, also support for the Mozilla Hubs scenes. So we have access to the assets that were created for Mozilla Hubs. They can be imported and used almost as is into my project. In itself, it has been mostly untested on a large scale for two reasons. So basically, testing on multiple VR headsets is a challenge in itself. There are different models, different browsers, and different models behave differently on the same browser sometimes. It's complicated. There are network challenges. You want to test possibly in different network setups. You want to test with many people. It's something that I still didn't find a good solution for. And then, so far, there were no real customers. So it has been tested casually with my colleagues or in some demo setup. On the client side, the technology I used was, well, WebXR. It's a set of standards for the web finalized in 2018, which basically describes the way a browser can interact with this VR-enabled sensors and lenses. It allows to track the user on the scene, etc. Combined with WebGL, So WebXR itself doesn't do any graphics. WebGL is the one that does actually the 3D heavy lifting. These two components are integrated into an abstraction layer called A-Frame, which is built on top of 3JS, and where it provides a nice abstraction where things such as shapes are described using markup. So we see a box, we see a sphere, and all of these can be interacted upon very similarly to what we do in HTML, for instance, query selectors, event handlers, and so on. On the server side, I used WebSockets. Why? Well, in a nutshell, what I'm doing is I have a local representation of the scene. Somebody jumps in, a remote peer jumps in. An avatar, a local avatar will be spawned, and then using WebSockets, the peer will send updates concerning their position, their hands, their gesture, and so on. And I update my local representation using the messages that are sent by the peer. Support for WebSockets and Navi Server is there since quite a long time. It's based on DNS conchan command. Initially, many of the message building into the WebSocket module was happening in TCL. Basically, whenever somebody moves, a new message is generated. On desktop, this means if I'm not touching the keyboard, nobody moves and there are no messages. But on an headset, this seldom happens. So there is always your head moving somehow. There are always your hands. So you should expect at least one WebSocket message per screen refresh at all times. With such a number of messages, browser will start segmenting their messages, for instance, or buffering them. So we do not have any more one message for every read. We have potentially a partial message or multiple messages. Then the channel itself might close unexpectedly. This is all stuff that can happen in such a setup. And the WebSocket module at the time was not able to handle this kind of messages. So there was no support for segmented messages, no support for partial read and write operations. And there was also a problem that will probably go away in TCL 9, the usual UTF-8 conversion problem. If by reading it happened that you read half of this double UTF characters, then you might have ended up with corrupted messages. So of course I asked help to Gustav Neumann, and in December 2020 he basically rewrote the entire module in a way that there was a C-level interface. The protocol was handling was completed, in the sense now we had partial read and write, segmented messages, and so on. And of course, it was much faster. Another component I used on the server side was TDOM. So because we send the messages using JSON, then there is a small server-side backend that acts as a message relay. So what we have to do is to parse this message, and depending on things contained to the message, for instance, who the owner is, because depending on the owner, we might decide if we send this message to the peer or not. Basically, what we have to do is to parse this JSON. And the initial implementation was done using TCL libJSON and JSON write, which were convenient enough, in particular when it comes to reading, because you can just parse a piece of JSON and you get a dict. But the problem is I also needed some level of persistence, and I could not afford that a message would lose its data types. There was also a problem that messages had to be reconstructed. If a message contained arrays, for example, this information would be lost in the parsing with TCL libJSON, and I had to reconstruct this structure by hand at a later time. So what I did, I decided, okay, I will switch to TDOM, which does the whole full circle. So reading, serializing, and reading again it's exactly the same document. I also found that it was, in fact, 100 times faster than Tkolib JSON parsing. And it was, in fact, already an OpenCS dependency, so it reduces the footprint of the whole apparatus, so to say. Features that I found to be useful on OpenACS is the site node system. So I could implement this package in a way that it can be mounted in a subsite. And so it can be instantiated multiple times, addressing potentially different cores in different configurations. Permissions and parameters were, of course, useful. So some features I made so that are activated only according to a parameter being set or according to your level of privileges. And then another feature I used was the includes and virtual URL handlers. I found a solution that allows to have, because I support multiple environments, and I can keep the code belonging to an environment separate from the code that relates to the whole experience. Thanks for watching. Please check out the project. It would be nice to if there was some feedback or if it was interesting for anybody. Maybe I will have time for a short demo. Okay, but first I have to do something fishy. That is, log in as somebody else, so that I can show. I will choose Hector. Okay, very well. I am Hector now, as you can see. I have integrated a couple of features. For instance, it's possible to embed a chat, which is actually the OpenACS chat. It's possible to have it displayed into VR. There are different environments, painting, WebRTC. WebRTC I won't show today. It would be out of scope for this presentation. So we can upload 3D models, and this can be spawned in VR. There is avatar support. So now we see Hector. I integrated with Ready Player Me, which is a free service to generate your own avatars. One cool thing that comes with A-Frame as a backend, as a front end actually, is that the experience works the same on browser than on a VR device. And if you notice, there is physics, and the physics engine that I'm using also supports complex shapes, so you can create a static physical body out of a complex shape such as this room. Nav meshes are also supported, and it's possible to spawn models. For instance, I will spawn an avocado now. I can despawn it. And now, if you probably something more interesting, I will try to go in and show you. I wonder how it will work out with the microphone, but not so bad. Okay, I can actually see you now. Oops. Ah, yes, I see. course, now it has to. I have to set it up. Okay, I have to draw some thingy. Okay, it's the first time it's doing it, of course, but yeah. Okay, now I don't see you anymore, but I'm about to. Okay, there I am. Okay. Can you see me? So, oops. Of course. Let me try again. Of course. The ball is nowhere. Okay, now there it is. I will pick it up and bring it to the camera so that I can show. Okay. So I also introduced some fancy stuff like making it smaller or bigger. I can also spawn from, I hope I don't hit anything. There we go. Yes, which I should be able to make bigger. And then something fancy, let's see if it works. Oops. Do you see it or? Okay, I want to write something. There we go. That's it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks to you.
Questions?
Does it already exist of the university real buildings virtually there?
Yes, but I'm not supposed to show you.
No, I'm just repeating my question for with the microphone. So the question was if the whole real buildings of the University of Economy are already.
So our colleagues from Digital Teaching Services, they do Medl in VR via using Mozilla Labs at the moment, and they created assets, for instance, based on actual rooms. So the whole university, I don't think it exists, but some rooms do exist.
There's one more. Everybody is so impressed.
Yeah, so it will be an easy question, I guess. What is the application that you are thinking of besides just playing and being bored on the lockdown time? You see, like, using it as an academic purposes, team meetings?
That's the thing. Back in the days when I was experimenting, then at some point we gave a presentation to our colleagues telling them, there is this cool stuff. What can we do with it? It's a typical question when you just want to use a technology, but the problem here at the university such as ours is VR is mostly useful, at least in my opinion, when it comes to simulations, visualizations, and it's not so clear what kind of value it can provide teaching subjects that are not practical. So probably it has a better use, for instance, safety training or vocational trades is also something where I know it is used a lot. For instance, I know it has been used in hotel management. They train you how to react to, I don't know, a difficult customer, and they do it using goggles and they check your reaction. One thing I've seen is also, for instance, they put in front of a virtual audience, and you have to give a speech, and maybe some of the people from the audience will have a snarky remark at you, and you have to react without losing your cool. It's also in a way that has been used. Yeah, I don't really have a reply to your question. It's a cool technology. It can be used for collaboration in general. Simulations, that's the kind of stuff that is mostly useful for.
I mean, okay. One of our former persons working at our research projects here is since now 7 years in England on the Open University, and he's doing there a wide range of virtual reality projects in education, but mostly from the engineering point of view. And one of the always thrilling things is there is equipment. I mean, as long as you have this quite heavy glasses there, it's certainly a hindrance for many projects there. And they're looking very much at things where you have not the big resolution, but a worse resolution, but with glasses and making it less invasive in the way how you can use things. And I think it will take a while until it takes up. The same thing what I'm saying here was said also 10 years ago probably, and people are waiting for smaller and better devices, but they're getting better, and it's just a matter of time until it will become more feasible. But for example, using smart glasses where you can have some kind of a mixed reality, so it's an augmented reality, works very similar to what we have here, but it is more lightweight in many respects, from the computing power to the, let's say, also the thing you have to wear on your head, and the easeability that you don't have this power supply. It's always a thing, how long can it run with your batteries, to have your batteries on your head or wherever. I mean, many of the things are currently questions.
Okay. And do you think that they will work with any VR headset, or is it specifically for the Quest?
Like I think they do, but again, not in the kind of subjects that we normally cover at VU. I know they use it in engineering. They use it, again, for training. For instance, surgeons train using VR goggles because the point is it's convenient the moment training on the actual thing becomes very expensive. Then if you can reproduce it accurately enough in VR, then it becomes appealing.
Okay. You should make then the models to be supported by the Apple Vision Pro, then, and then everything will be so expensive that it has to be in real life. So
the A-Frame framework, in fact, works on the Apple Vision Pro, and it potentially, I never tried, of course, but potentially this project and all this web VR project should also work on the Apple Vision Pro browser. I know they hide WebXR via flag at the moment, but once the flag is enabled, they should work in principle also the same.
Okay, Antonio, many thanks.